My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Steve Turney hosts a great podcast geared toward mental health marketers called The Boost. Steve, tell listeners what you cover on the show.
The Boost is our podcast, and the tagline is conversations with people promoting mental health. And that's what it is. So it's marketers, company executives, therapists, and mental health advocates talking about what they're doing to move this industry and this important thing called mental health forward.
Amazing. And where can people subscribe?
I'm big on LinkedIn, so you can find us there, just slash Steve Turney, or you can find the show at marketingpodcasts.net or search for The Boost wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Rob Meyerson.
Everybody thinks they can come up with a name because we all speak the language or speak some language. And, you know, we deal with words every day. That's just part of life. Whereas a designer, a lot of people think I can't draw. I don't know what looks good. And so there is this respect and due respect put on designers that they're the experts. Let's let them do the logo work. But when it comes to a name, I mean, that's just a word. Anybody can do that, right? And I think that's the misunderstanding that gets a lot of people into trouble.
Rob Meyerson is a namer, brand consultant, and principal, and founder of Heirloom, an independent brand strategy and identity firm. Prior to founding Heirloom, Rob's previous roles included head of brand architecture and naming at HP, director of verbal identity at Interbrand in San Francisco, and director of strategy at Future Brand in Southeast Asia. His past clients range from Fortune 500 to Silicon Valley startups from San Francisco to Shanghai, including brands such as Adobe, AT&T, GE, John Deere, Disney, Guitar Hero, Intel, Meta, Facebook, Microsoft, Walmart, and Yahoo. An experienced namer, Rob has created names for companies CoreLight, nonprofits like Swing Left, products Sierra Wireless Octave, and services. Rob has written about brand strategy and brand naming for leading publications such as Entrepreneur, TechCrunch, Insider, The Guardian, VentureBeat, and Branding Strategy Insider. Rob, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. It's great to be here.
You know, I am excited for this conversation. I've had your book, Brand Naming, sitting on my desk for a while and been looking forward to it because it really seems like, I mean, both on this podcast and I'd say within the discipline of branding itself, I feel like we don't talk about brand naming enough. Maybe you spend all of your time there, but I don't know how you think about that.
Yeah, it's funny to hear you say that because, of course, I've been talking about it quite a lot for quite a long time. But I suppose you're right. The reason I do that is because I feel that it is perhaps an underappreciated piece of the branding puzzle.
It really is. And I feel like it's, you know, I was trying to back as far out as I could get. I mean, I suppose a logo maybe, but I feel like compared to the logo, which we give all kinds of attention to, naming is just as important, just as early of a touch point, and can have just as big an impact. But why
Why all the logo attention and not as much for naming?
Well, first off, I completely agree. I would point out that the logo changes, which is part of why it gets attention, because every time there's a big logo redesign, that gets attention in the industry and sometimes even outside the industry, whether that's for good reasons or bad. The name typically doesn't change. That's what will stay the same when IBM or Apple or Coca-Cola. I know these are brands that don't make big logo changes all that often, but even when they make a tiny tweak to something, that'll be news in the industry. But of course, those names have been with us for over 100 years in some cases. And so I'd argue the importance of the name, part of it stems from that lack of change. And if you are changing the name, then that's probably something pretty drastic that's happened, either something really bad or in some cases an acquisition or a merger, which could be good, but still a pretty dramatic shift in the business and in the brand.
That's a really interesting point between those two very important touch points is that, like you said, a logo is surface level. It can change. That was the first thing you just said, but a name is something really foundational. And if you're changing it, you're absolutely right. Something big has happened, like you said, either bad or potentially good in terms of growth. I also think when we say we don't talk about it enough, that it's a process that's not understood. And I feel like, you get people just pulling ideas left, mm-hmm. right, center, all over the place without much process to it. So I guess the first big question is where do you start with naming?
Well, really quickly, I think what you just said is actually another really good reason that there's so much attention paid to logos, or maybe a disparity in the amount of respect, let's say, that a logo designer might get, is that I think everybody thinks they can come up with a name because we all speak the language or speak some language, and we deal with words every day. That's just part of life. Whereas a designer, a lot of people think, I can't draw, I don't know what looks good. And so there is this respect and due respect put on designers that they're the experts. Let's let them do the logo work. But when it comes to a name, I mean, that's just a word. Anybody can do that, right? And I think that's the misunderstanding that gets a lot of people into trouble, startup founders, or even people in big businesses that are naming new products, is they think, well, let's just have a brainstorming session and throw a couple of words on a whiteboard and we'll pick our favorite one and we're done. And unfortunately, that doesn't usually work for a number of reasons. So let's come back to that when we talk about the process more. But to answer your initial question, where should the process start? It's actually with a brief, similar to a logo or a lot of other creative deliverables. You need a creative brief that documents for you and whoever else you're working with, whether that's a client or other people on your team, exactly what do we want this name to be? What kinds of words are going to work? What kinds of ideas would we want to express or avoid expressing? Even down into the nitty-gritty of, are there specific letters that we need to avoid for some reason? Or, what are the competitors named? And we need to make sure we're not too similar to those in any way. So getting all that documented and getting everyone to agree on it is the first step and one of the most important steps.
So with that brief of what you are, what you're trying to do, from there, you talk early on in the book about the kind of different types of names. And stop me if I've jumped too far ahead in the process, too. Like I said, I don't think we talk about this enough, but you talk about the difference in abstract and descriptive names. And I mm-hmm. feel like when people maybe don't have enough process behind this, they end up pretty squarely in one of those two camps, and sometimes with a lot of attitude around why they're there. I mean, and we think that maybe with the meat and potatoes descriptive camp, but I feel like the abstract camp has a lot of followers that maybe don't know exactly why they're in that camp.
Yeah, I talk about different name types along two different dimensions. And the first is what you just described, from descriptive. So a company name like The Container Store or Pizza Hut, you know exactly what you're going there for. They say it right in the name. Up to more abstract, which could be something like Apple, which if you try to put yourself in the mindset of someone who's never heard of that company before, you have absolutely no idea what they do. You probably think that they sell fruit. Or it could be something like Dasani, which you have even less of an idea, you know, because it's not even a word that you've heard before. And so that's the other dimension here for different name types, is whether you're using real words or coined words, invented words like Dasani and Kodak and Sony are all just made up words, or something in between, which there's a category we called compound, which is two real words smushed together to make something like Zipcar. There are a few other name types like acronyms, different types of abbreviations, or sometimes just using a foreign word, which is a type of real word, obviously, but it's a little bit of a different approach to name yourself after, to use Prego, let's say, for a spaghetti sauce. Even though that's an American brand, they chose an Italian word for obvious reasons. So there are all these different approaches. And I think you're right. People have very strong feelings, sometimes I think unfounded, about which of these is best. The short answer is that none of them are automatically better than any others, but they all have pros and cons and work best for different situations.
So do you narrow the category down, or do you starting in one category, or do you try different types? Do you category jump?
It depends a little bit. That is something that I usually try to cover in the brief, but honestly, a lot of times, depending on the client, we'll say, let's just explore everything at first, and we'll narrow it down based on what seems to be working and what doesn't. But there are reasons that you might narrow it down right at the beginning. I mean, it could just be preferences. Like you said, people have strong feelings. And, you know, I work in a consultative capacity. So if my client says, hey, I hate these made up words, I don't want anything like that, then okay, we're probably not going to explore that much. Although I might throw one or two just to kind of test their hypothesis there. But it could also be looking at the competition. You know, we could see, hey, everybody here has these compound names like Zipcar and Fitbit, and it seems to be like a trend in our industry for some reason. Wouldn't it be nice to break away from that with just a simple real word, or maybe something coined that just sounds really different? So there is a strategic aspect to naming that I think also is overlooked. It's not just about a cool, creative, funky, fun to say word. It's also thinking about strategy, as we always do in branding. And a big part of that is, what's the competitive set? How are we going to stand apart from those other names?
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Steve Turney hosts a great podcast geared toward mental health marketers called The Boost. Steve, tell listeners what you cover on the show.
The Boost is our podcast, and the tagline is conversations with people promoting mental health. And that's what it is. So it's marketers, company executives, therapists, and mental health advocates talking about what they're doing to move this industry and this important thing called mental health forward.
Amazing. And where can people subscribe?
I'm big on LinkedIn, so you can find us there, just slash Steve Turney, or you can find the show at marketingpodcasts.net or search for The Boost wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show. So you talked about some of the important steps that we need to take in thinking about all of this, the competition and so forth. But you also, in the book, mention some pretty important steps that it's easy to sit and think, oh, well, duh, of course you'd do that. But it doesn't happen. I'm, of course, talking about, you have chapters on trademark pre-screening, linguistics. These are, again, I'm going to say this probably 10 times, we don't talk about naming enough, and it's because of this that we find ourselves in trouble in categories like legal and linguistics.
Sure. Yeah, legal is something that I think most people, whether they work in branding or not, understand that you need to have a name that you can, in most cases, that you can own from a trademark standpoint. But I have, when I worked at HP and I was head of naming there, we would hire high-end naming agencies. And I've even had a high-end agency that I won't name come in and present a bunch of name ideas to us for a company level name, you know, something really, really important. And we loved everything. We couldn't believe it. We thought these are great. And so I had this little kind of tickle in the back of my brain. And I said, are we going to be able to own any of these? Have you checked to make sure that nobody's using these? Cause these names seem almost too good to be true. And they looked at me and said, well, no, we skipped that step. And I thought, well, that's why all these names seem too good to be true. And, you know, and that'll happen. That happens at that end, unfortunately, or it did in that case. But it's much more common for amateurs to just think, you know, if I come up with 10 ideas, surely one of them I can have. And they might, you know, people might be surprised to know that we generally come up with hundreds or even over 1,000 ideas for any given project. I've seen, depending on what you're naming, I've seen 90% of names not be available. I've worked in industries where you think you have the most obscure idea and nobody's ever come up with this. It's so strange, but it's, you know, it's really interesting and it could work. And nope, somebody somewhere in the world has it. And you know, whether or not that's an issue is a question eventually for a trademark attorney. But the critical step that a lot of people skip is before they go to that attorney is just doing what I call a preliminary trademark check. So there are free publicly available databases from the U.S. Trademark and Patent Office. You can just Google things a lot of times and see, oh, there's some company that's using that name for a very similar product. And so the chances that you know, that they get upset are pretty high. And so it'd be a mistake to do this. So weeding out those obvious conflicts before you get too far into the process is a really critical step that is unfortunately sometimes glossed over.
And speaking of steps we gloss over, I should have lumped this in there. There's just a slew of useful chapters there in the book, because right up there with it, you mentioned owning this and searching for things. You've got the domain in there. So,
right.
I mean, this happens all the time. I can say with confidence, because I know it's happened to me, where you've got something, it clears every other hurdle, and then the darn domain thing.
Yeah, so .com will be taken.
Yeah. Yeah. So is it a deal breaker? What's your thinking there?
Yeah. So this is probably one of the parts of the book that's maybe a little contentious, and I'll acknowledge that there is disagreement on this. Although I believe that the majority of professional namers who do this for a living are aligned on this, that it is not a deal breaker. I think that's the best way to put it. I mean, sure, getting the exact.com is great. The domain is important in this day and age. But generally speaking, adding a little descriptor at the end of the name, so If you're naming, let's take another made-up fruit name here. Let's say your pineapple microchips, then adding microchip at the end of the name and getting pineapple microchip or pineapple chips or pineapplecomputing.com is going to be a pretty good solution. And this is a lot of this is because these days we're no longer trying to type in exact.coms into an address bar. We've all kind of evolved to work with Chrome or Google in a way that we just kind of type what we think we're looking for, and it pretty much pops up for us now, thanks to the power of these search engines. And so that need to get a great .com has really diminished, or I should say to get a perfect .com has really diminished, I think, for the majority of categories and brands out there.
Well, those extension descriptors and thinking of search too, I think is really smart. What you just said there, like what someone's searching for. I know with my books, my first one was Get Scrappy, and my domain that I direct folks to there is Get Scrappy Book. Mm-hmm. And, it seems to me that would fit that requirement that you just talked about of what people are going to, what they might add on in a search, and that's not, you see it, I mean, all over the place. I mean, there's some common ones that people use for, like, it seems like the marketing focused ones, like get XYZ app.
Yes.
.com and so forth.
Exactly. And I have a list of those in the book. There are words you can put before. So get or try or we are, a lot of times for an agency, I see, we are whatever the agency name is .com. And so I think those are all great. I think where there are industry standards, so putting book at the end of a book name or putting movie even at the end of a movie name, right, has become pretty common. And I did the same thing, brand naming book.com, just to get the URL in there.
Yeah,
I think there are these sort of standard solutions. There are, of course, other top level domains that don't have the same cachet. But of course, you could use a .net or a .org, and depending on what you're doing, it might be might make more sense to use a .edu or something like that. And we have all these new TLDs. There's .coffee. .motorcycles, .heirloom. My agency is, I went ahead and bought heirloom.agency as well, because I just figured it's another way that people might find me. And so you mentioned SEO, and I'm not an SEO expert, but I think that one of the things I've said is, sometimes you can get that exact.com but it's just got a hefty price tag on it. And I would say instead of ponying up the $30,000 to get that exact.com, just get that simpler .com with a descriptor in it, and then put some of that money towards SEOing the website that you've built so that people can find you more easily.
So you mentioned agencies a while back, and I want to also mention the other great thing in the book that I'm sure a lot of agency listeners are gonna be excited about is the idea of presenting names, because boy, it's logos too, but it's tricky presenting identity concepts. What are some of the best practices around this?
Yeah, so that's a great point. And that's another, I think, really critical chapter in the book that I feel like has not been detailed as much as it probably should. I like to say that, coming up with a bunch of really creative and interesting name ideas is actually a much smaller part of the battle than you would think, because ultimately it's not about a lot of great ideas. It's about a single idea that has actually been agreed upon. And that often is the hardest part. So presenting is where we manage a lot of the emotions that swirl around naming, some of the politics that can infect the process. If you're dealing with a team or even three founders that have to agree on something that can seem really subjective and that they may bring their own emotional baggage into, we all have associations with words, and maybe it sounds like something we experienced early in our life, another business or a person that we didn't have a good relationship with. And so none of that should impact the name. I think, it's pretty obvious from a rational level or a strategic level, but of course it can, because we're emotional people. And so setting up the presentation in the right way is critical. And I have a lot in this chapter about really teeing things up, priming your audience, explaining to them what they're about to see, explaining to them some of the mistakes people make when they try to evaluate names. So people often expect, for example, that the best name will simply jump off the page, so to speak, that, you know, I'm going to show you 15 ideas and one of them, they think, will just scream at them, oh my God, that's the perfect name. And everybody will agree unanimously, of course, that's the best name, and we're done. And that just doesn't happen. Even if you're lucky enough that one of them really speaks to you, the idea of it also being the same one for everybody else in the room, if you're dealing with a team, the odds are almost zero. And so you have to be ready to accept that some of these ideas could work strategically. Let's stay open-minded. And you have to be able to be flexible and find one that works the best, as opposed to expecting that, you know, that single perfect name to jump off the page.
That's so key. So many things that you just said. I also like the idea of not presenting just a big list of names. And I feel like so taking that into a meeting, I feel like that's a way that this process, one of the many ways this process can go wrong. Instead of focusing that, instead of getting that, as you talk about earlier in the book, narrowing it down, I think going into the meeting with the stakeholders with the great big unnarrowed list is a mistake, and is gonna, like you said, the idea that everybody's gonna that the one name's gonna jump out to everybody is a tangled mess.
Right. A couple of sort of classic no-nos for namers. Don't just email a list of names and say, you know, here's my 10 favorite ideas. Which one do you want to pick? That doesn't work. So even just getting to the presentation, doing a presentation is one of the biggest things here. Making it feel more formal, making it clear that thought and work has gone into these names and that it wasn't just your first off-the-cuff ideas. All of that is part of managing the psychology of this decision making. So I do have slides typically in presentations up front that say, you know, we came up with 1,000 ideas. We're showing you the best 20 that have been through all of this vetting, just to give people the idea there that we had a lot of ideas. The reason we're showing you these is because we think they're the best and because they've made it through this. So that sort of short circuits that knee jerk reaction that you sometimes get of, oh, you know, I see these 20 that you're showing me, but have you thought of this? What about this? You know, I have a few more ideas. What about these? And a lot of times I can tell clients if they do go down that road, yep, we thought of that one. You know, unfortunately, it wasn't available. And to your point, I don't like to share that longer list of the hundreds and hundreds of ideas. It's just so overwhelming that it can really cause that paralysis by analysis. And given that we're trying to get to a decision here, that's the wrong way to go.
Rob, I want to, before we segue into the brand that has made you smile, I want to see if we can get some naming quick hits. And it doesn't have to be, a big thesis on the why you're choosing it. But I want to, in teeing up that smile, go for a brand name that you think, wow, that's great, really knocked it out of the park. And then maybe if we can not maybe put it on too awkward of a ground, maybe say, boy, that could have been done better. So do you have one that you cite that's like your go-to? That's an awesome name.
Yeah, I have a few in the book, and I've mentioned Apple already, which I think everybody, you know, puts a lot of love on for not just the name, but you know, everything about the brand. I'm gonna say Swiffer because it's such a, you know, it's such an inglorious product. But I have to give a lot of credit here to a naming agency called Lexicon, who developed that name, and they're also the agency behind some of the greats, Pentium, Sonos. They named Zima back in the day. Swiffer, I think, is just an ingenious use of speech sounds. So even though that's a made-up word, it immediately conveys something about a sweeping motion, maybe a cleaning product of some sort. And so I love that name. It also, speaking of distinctiveness, every other name in the space had mop in the name. So they went up against the Ready Mop and the Quick Mop and all these other things. And they, I think, hit it out of the park with this really distinctive coined word that has some inherent meaning and feels like a real word. That's one of the things we look for with these coined words, is that it doesn't feel like some concocted, invented, like a robot or AI came up with it. It feels like Swiffer. That could be a real word. I'm sure I've heard that somewhere, and you almost know what it means before you've been told.
And bonus points because you can turn it into a verb. I mean, we talk about someone needs to, you know, Swiffer the dining room.
Yep. I'm sure whoever has to do that's not happy about it, but it has to happen sometimes. And it's probably easier with that product than without it. The names that don't work so well, I also list some. And this is a little harder because sometimes names fail not necessarily because of the name, but because of a really mishandled launch of the name. And I describe a few of those in the book and go into detail on why. But one that I think is just pretty bad across the board is Tronc. And Tronc was a relatively short-lived renaming of Tribune Online Content, the Tribune news company, shortened Tribune Online Content to Tronc. They made a big deal out of this. They created a, unfortunately, also pretty ugly logo for it. And that name, you know, I talk about a lot of different reasons that names can be bad, for lack of a better word. But really, I think what does that one in, I know it's subjective, but it just sounds gross. It sounds silly at best, right? But it just, you know, it sounds really strange. You have no idea what it is or what it means. When you find out what it means, my sort of reaction is, oh, why didn't you just say that instead of shortening it into something that nobody could ever understand? And so I imagine that's part of why, after a couple of years of being made fun of quite a bit in the branding community and outside of the branding community, they just got rid of it and switched back to Tribune Online Content.
I'm so glad you said that. There was so much we didn't have time to get to in our interview here, but the mishandled launch, I think, is an important thing to point to, and mm-hmm. a cautionary tale in and of itself, because sometimes it's not a bad name. Sometimes it's a clumsy launch. It's not, and you could do it with logos too. So let's go with the easy question. What's a brand that has made you, theoretically easy, a brand that has made you smile recently?
Well, another one of my favorite names is Recess, which is a sparkling CBD beverage. And from the second I saw this, I think it's 5, 6, maybe even older than that, 5 or 6 years old. As a branding person, you'll love it. Just the color palette, they really, you can tell they have a love of design, the way they've handled things. The name to me is great. It speaks to taking a break. It's really nostalgic for, you know, running outside on the playground. And so I think they nailed it with the name and all of the branding. And I actually enjoy the product as well. So I would say Recess is a brand that's made me smile.
That is awesome. Love when we hear about new fun brands like Recess. Rob, where can folks go? We already said it, but we were talking about it. But where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So the book is for sale on Amazon, of course. But if you want to learn more about it, you can go to brandnamingbook.com. You can also go to robmeyerson.com. That's M-E-Y-E-R-S-O-N. And from there, you'll see links to not only the book, but also my agency, Heirloom, some of the things I've been writing, other kind of appearances that I've done. And so that's probably the best one-stop shop.
Awesome. And we'll link up to that in our show notes, which you can find, and I'm going to do it again because it happened with the podcast, at onbrandpodcast.com. It's everywhere. Rob, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick. It was fun.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember you can listen free on Apple, Spotify, or whatever your favorite platform may be. Brand names are everywhere. I'm overthinking them. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Steve Turney hosts a great podcast geared toward mental health marketers called The Boost. Steve, tell listeners what you cover on the show.
The Boost is our podcast, and the tagline is conversations with people promoting mental health. And that's what it is. So it's marketers, company executives, therapists, and mental health advocates talking about what they're doing to move this industry and this important thing called mental health forward.
Amazing. And where can people subscribe?
I'm big on LinkedIn, so you can find us there, just /Steve Turney, or you can find the show at marketingpodcasts.net. Or search for The Boost wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.